have an ambitious calendar or schedule before us. Let's try to get through this as quickly as possible. Madam Secretary, let's establish a quorum. Please call the roll.
Senators Cannella.
Here.
Cannella here. Leyva.
Here.
Leyva here. Mitchell.
Here.
Mitchell here. Runner.
Here.
Runner here. De Leon.
Here.
De Leon here.
Fantastic. We've established a quorum. We're going to go to file item number one, references of bills to the respective policy and fiscal committees. Can I get a motion? We have a motion made by Ms. Mitchell. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Runner.
Aye.
Runner, aye. De Leon.
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Okay. Measure passes on a 5-0 vote. We're going to go to file item number two. We have governor's appointees that are required to appear before this Senate Rules Committee. We have before us, we're going to go to file item number 2A, which is Mr. Justin Paddock, Chief Bureau of Electronic and Appliance Repair, Home Furnishings, and Thermal Insulation. Sounds like the Maytag man. You know, I've never heard this position before, but I welcome you, Mr. Paddock, and please give us a brief statement, and we'll go to questions and answers.
Certainly. Thank you. Chairman De Leon and Senators, my name is Justin Paddock. Thank you for considering confirmation of my appointment as Chief of the Bureau of Electronic and Appliance Repair, Home Furnishings, and Thermal Insulation. The Bureau regulates diverse markets impacting California consumers on a daily basis. I bring to this position over 10 years of experience in the public sector. Before I was appointed as Chief, I served in the Department of Consumer Affairs Legislative Office. While serving in the department, I earned a law degree from the University of Pacific McGeorge School of Law, and I'm a licensed attorney. In addition to my service with the Department of Consumer Affairs, I worked in legislative and policy offices with the California Air Resources Board. Moving forward, my goals are to 1, ensure the Bureau is fiscally stable, 2, increase consumer awareness of the Bureau, and 3, increase enforcement activities associated with serious violations. Thank you for your consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Paddock. You know what? I actually failed to ask if you had any loved ones that you'd like to introduce.
My wife of almost 10 years, and it's in the back, Elizabeth Tyndall Paddock.
Oh, pleasure. Welcome. Fantastic. Thank you much, Mr. Paddock. Colleagues, questions, commentaries? Ms. Mitchell?
None for me.
None for Ms. Mitchell. Mr. Cannella?
No questions.
None for Mr. Cannella. Madam Vice Chair?
Nope.
Certainly, Ms. Leyva will have a question or two, or a personal commentary of such. If not, make one up. You know
that could happen too. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Paddock. I very much enjoyed meeting with you and sharing with you that I felt bad that I did not know that this particular position existed. Okay, thank you very much, Senator Mitchell. However, was fascinated by what you actually do and really excited to hear about the community outreach. And maybe you could share with everyone some of the ideas that you had so that everyone wouldn't be like me in the world and not know that they had you.
So Senator Leyva and Senator Mitchell are not alone. This is actually a critique that we received in 2014 when we did a market condition assessment. A lot of people know the Department of Consumer Affairs, but not as many know that we're out there. In order to remedy that situation, we've actually created a 2016 outreach plan that I'll be unveiling next week in the Southern California area. That entails updating our website so that there's more translation functions on the website, having dedicated language lines. In addition to that, creating some YouTube videos and doing some local outreach in various jurisdictions.
Very good. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem.
Thank you, Ms. Leyva. I overheard our Madam Vice Chair, Ms. Runner, made reference to, obviously, the title of your position is Chief of the Bureau of Electronic Appliance Repair, Home Furnishings, Thermal Insulation, which is a newly acronym that you want to create, which is Bear Hufty. You'd be the chair.
That's what we call
Bear
it around the
Hufty,
shop, Senator.
B-E-A-R. H-F-T-I, Bear Hufty, you know.
In my next sentence,
I
review, I'd like to add a few words.
Your wife has for you, you know, but, you know. You know, if there's no questions or commentaries from members, can I entertain a motion for Mr. Paddock? We have a motion made. Oh, I apologize. We got to go for those who are in support of today's nominee. Any folks in support? Seeing none, those in opposition. Also seeing no opposition, we do have a motion made by Ms. Leyva. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Runner.
Aye.
Runner, aye. De Leon.
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Motion passes in a 5-0 vote. Mr. Paddock, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic. We've dispensed with file item number two. We have file item number two, B, C, and D. With us, we have three members, trustees of the California State University System. We have Mr. Silas Abrego, Mr. Adam Day, and Mr. Peter Taylor. Welcome, and please come on up. Mr. Abrego, Mr. Day, Mr. Taylor, I guess we'll go alphabetically. Please, why don't you give a statement each, and then what we'll do is we'll go to questions and answers from the members of the Senate Rules Committee. Thank you. Welcome. And if there's any loved ones that you want to introduce, please feel free to do so.
Okay. Because of my own background, I truly believe that education is one of the greatest gifts we can give a young person. The CSU, Cal State, graduated from Cal State Long Beach, and it really changed my life, and the opportunity that I had there. And I want to extend the same opportunity that I experienced to other people. My goodness, what's happening here? Let me start over again. My goodness.
Would you like to take a break? That's
no,
okay.
No, sure. Not at all.
Okay.
It's just that it's a great opportunity for me to trustee. I want to make it clear that I have a real passionate for education. I truly believe that young people who are deserving of a higher education have that opportunity to pursue that that gift. I've dedicated my career with endeavors to create access with activities to increase retention, leading to graduation. And not only to graduate from with a BA degree, but to be able to be eligible to pursue a professional a school or a graduate school. So my dedication in my life has been to assist young people who dream about education, doing something with their life, to have that opportunity to do so through education. Here with me today is my wife, 46 years, Florentina Abrego.
Valentina, welcome. Ms. Abrego, welcome. Thank you very much, you. Mr. Abrego. You said Mr. Abrego's daughter?
She looks so young.
Oh, I'm sorry, I apologize. Yes. That was Mr. Abrego's daughter. I apologize. I apologize for that. Yes. My mistake, Mr. Abrego. Mr. Day, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Pro Tem. Senators, it's a pleasure to be here with your committee again. It's just been just over 1 year since I appeared before the committee last. In that year, it's been a phenomenal opportunity to serve the state of California and the students of the CSU. If reconfirmed by your committee and the Senate, I would enjoy focusing on the financial situation of the CSU, making it a sustainable model well into the future, addressing the achievement gap and gender diversity within both student body as well as faculty and staff ranks, and finally dealing with the infrastructure needs of our 23 campuses, both new facilities, but especially facilities that have significant needs for deferred maintenance. So with that, I would like to thank you again for the opportunity to be with you today and hopefully answer your questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Day. Mr. Taylor, we keep bumping into each other in Los Angeles.
Indeed we do.
Yes, welcome.
Indeed. Thank you for the opportunity to be here, Mr. Chairman and members. I'd like to introduce my wife, Carolyn Andres Taylor, who flew up from Los Angeles to join me today. She's a health educator at Good Samaritan Hospital in downtown Los Angeles. And we've been married almost 30 years, not quite.
Right across the street from the good, from the Pacific Dining Car.
Exactly.
Right there, yes.
Yeah. I come from an education family. My mother was a Spanish teacher. My father a math teacher, who became a principal in the LA Unified Schools, the second African American principal in the history of the district, and the first in an all-white school in the San Fernando Valley. Later became deputy superintendent of LAUSD in the 70s and 80s. Very turbulent time in public education. And I saw him as I was sitting around the dinner table in the evenings and on weekends struggle with how to make public dollars stretch further to try to support student success. What an honor it is for me to be now a part of an institution and have an opportunity to use my finance background to think about how do you stretch dollars further to help student success In many ways, it's coming back home and an opportunity to help young people, working-class kids, in a great institution like CSU. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Taylor, and thank you very much, Mr. Brago, Mr. Day, and Mr. Taylor. Why don't we start with questions or commentaries? Ms. Leyva.
Well, I enjoyed meeting with all three of you again, Mr. Day, but really I just wanted to comment, as I said when I met with you, Mr. Abrego, I received numerous text messages, emails, and phone calls letting me know what a terrific person you are, and I think that's because you're from Pomona, and that's the city in my district, so people are very familiar with you, so very excited to have you here, as well as Mr. Taylor, and again, second year, Mr. Day, so welcome.
Thank you very much. Don't let them know I got tongue-tied.
Thank you very much, Ms. Leyva. Madam Vice Chair.
Well, good afternoon. I think we met this morning, so now it's afternoon. Great to spend some time with you and talk through some of the issues. We talked a lot about my concern about non-residents coming in to CSU and taking the place of our California students, and in my opinion, and probably everyone on the dais here, believes we should be taking care of our resident students first. And the good news is CSU is doing that mostly. We talked about a couple campuses, both San Diego and Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, that in Cal Poly, actually, the non-resident freshman has grown from 3% in 99 to almost 19% in 2015. At both San Diego and Cal Poly, a non-resident applicant is likely to be accepted at two times the rate of a resident applicant. In fact, San Diego State has over 95% acceptance rate of eligible non-resident applicants versus only 40% for resident applicants. I wasn't expecting you to have answers, and these figures I just gave you this morning, so I look forward to working with you in the future and seeing what we can do, especially in those impacted schools in both San Diego and Cal Poly. So you can respond to that or just tell me you'll talk to me later when you figure it all out. And I do thank the office, CSU department helping and giving those figures and rates to us that we shared with you this morning.
We heard you loud and clear, and our commitment is to in-state residents, to serve them first. And to make sure we've been denying so many eligible students that are concerned, to find a way to accommodate all students here in the state of California.
Thank you, Senator. It was good to meet with you and your staff, and I too share your concern on this issue and look forward to working with you and your staff and the CSU system to address that. I think it's important that our residents of California have the first shot and that we understand the needs that they need to be met. So thank you.
I would just add, Senator, that improved access for Californians goes hand in hand with improved completion for our existing students. And if we can move students through the system and get them to graduate more quickly, that frees up space for everybody. And that will be valuable in our efforts to make sure that qualified California young people have access to the CSU. And that's something I'll be very focused upon in the next 5 years if you are inclined to support me with this confirmation.
Yes, thank you. We did discuss that too, the graduation rate and what your plans are, and I was very satisfied with your answers this morning and what you're trying to do and number crunching and extra counseling and other things that you might do to make sure they can try and get through in the 4 years. The average, I think, is six, but it makes sense if they're 4 years because there's more seats available then for the new students coming in. So I think the extra counseling and that we talked about this morning is a great idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Mr. Cannella.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. We had a time to talk today, and as I mentioned to all three of you, I'm very impressed with the CSU system. Number one, your tuition, $5,400 plus or minus per year, is very affordable for middle-class folks. I think that's terrific. I'm also impressed with your ability to see the problems and try to head it off. One thing we talked about was preparing kids for college. I know that's really not your problem, but it becomes your problem once they get into college and they're not prepared and you have to spend a lot of time teaching them how to learn. And so, you know, if we can figure out a creative way to work with the school districts now, since, you know, you're paying for it anyway once they get into college, then I think that's money well spent. So just keep up the good work. I mean, you've all been there about a year serving on the board, and I just think you guys are doing a great job, and I think CSU in general is doing a great job. So thank you for your service, and thank you for all your work you do for the citizens of California.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cannella. Ms. Mitchell.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pro Tem. I, too, appreciated the time I spent with the appointees today. We had a rather unconventional conversation. Would you expect anything different from me?
from Ms. Mitchell.
Yeah, right. And it was, and we talked really broadly and generally about our overall visions and concerns, really about educating the next generation of California's leaders. And I started by sharing with them a video that my sophomore brought to me this morning, Mr. Pro Tem. And it's a video of college students in Texas, and it's like jaywalking. So they're just walking up to college students in Texas, and they ask them a question about the Civil War. They said, who won the Civil War?
Yeah.
Not a single student knew. One student said, well, who fought in it? And they asked them what year the war occurred, and one student said 1970-something. And say it again? Right, that's right. There were three or four core fundamental questions. Now, of course, the high school sophomore brought it to me and told me that while I'm struggling in Algebra 2, I didn't know the answer to all these questions. So you know, his point was for me to back off of him. But I thought it was an interesting linchpin to begin our conversation about the challenges that we're all facing in terms of this current population and how we educate them and prepare them for the workforce. So I appreciate your willingness to engage in that broader conversation with me, but it also gave me deeper insight really into all three of you in terms of your passion, why you're willing to serve on the board, and I certainly appreciate that. I had two questions, one of which clearly you must have focused on your conversations with our vice chair, and it's based on a report issued by the Campaign for College Opportunity that talked about the student to counselor ratio at the CSU campuses, the average being about 2,700 to 1, but at CSU Los Angeles in LA, it's 7,900 to 1. And as we're talking about the challenges, students, the diversity of your student population, when you think of the number of foster care kids in the CSU system, the number of kids who are first-time college attendees and their family, and just all the additional support kids today need, I'm hoping that's an issue that you all will continue to address to figure out how you bring that ratio down, because I can't imagine how anyone in 4 or 6 years with a 1-to-7,900 ratio ever could get into a counselor to get any counseling or direction. So apparently you discussed that with Ms. Runner, so I hope it's something you continue to work on. Just very quickly, this budget so far includes a 4% unrestricted base increase. I'm sure the legislature has ideas on how we'd like you to apply that money, but as trustees, it's ultimately your responsibility. Just as a trustee, how do you balance all the expectations? We talked about infrastructure and the need for reinvestment and maintenance. We talked about in-class infusion of resources. As a trustee, if you had a magic wand, how would you allocate this increase in funding to the system?
If I had a magic wand and I could make the decision myself, I would apply that to, again, my goal is to drive cash into the classroom. And in my view, that means more tenure-track faculty. I was surprised when I got to CSU to see the low percentage of overall faculty being tenure-track. Mm-hmm. I believe stability in the faculty ranks is important.
And the part-time, full-time kind of equation as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I would focus on adding more gateway courses. These are the courses that you must have in order to pursue another class, mm-hmm. introductory chemistry, introductory biology. Mm-hmm. Those tend to slow down time to degree if you don't have enough when they're not at the right time, so I would improve availability of those. I would also focus on trying to lower class size. And I would have focused on intrusive advising. Having the advisors is one thing, but don't make it voluntary. Make it required that students come and get the engagement so they can get that affirmative counseling before they get into trouble. Mm-hmm. So if I could wave the magic wand, that's where I'd...
That's
personally apply the resources.
Thank you.
I agree with Peter. I would add one more component, and that is early outreach and work with the K-12 population, and in particular the parents.
Thank you, Senator. I would concur with my colleagues. I would just say that setting the budget is the most important job of the board each and every year. And the budget's a policy document, so it needs to reflect the policy objectives and the views of the board, but also the state. And so much of our spending, just like every other state agency, is on autopilot, really, when you talk about salaries and benefits and utility costs, health care, pensions, et cetera. But every new dollar, as many of those dollars can go into the classroom, I would agree is the most important. We also need to recognize compensation issues for our faculty and staff. And we need to address infrastructure.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mitchell. Ms. Mitchell made reference to her son, sophomore Ryan Mitchell, who's an outstanding young man. So you guys should keep your eyes on him, because I don't know if some school is going to.
He did have to know the answer to both fundamentals.
Yeah, it should. You should definitely keep your eyes on him. He's an outstanding young man, an amazing mother who has raised Ryan to be a very fine young man. Ms. Mitchell made reference to, or perhaps Mr. Taylor made reference to, the issue of tenureship. And obviously, you know, I think 50% of your faculty are, in fact, adjuncts, or they're instructors. They're not tenured professors. You say you're supportive of moving towards more tenureship. Obviously, that is a budgetary issue that brings much more stability, if you will, to academic courses, to the student body population, to the institution itself. Obviously, when we have more full-time faculty, it always has the effect of stabilizing the institution, as opposed to the outsourcing, if you will, which are driven by budgetary issues. Obviously, you're part of the governance level. Why don't you give us a little more of your insights, if you will, between tenured and non-tenured, and what this means for the institution itself?
Sure. If you think about all the various different adult stakeholders on a campus, the one that has the greatest influence on the success of young people is the faculty member. And our adjuncts and our tenure track faculty, they're all dedicated. They all want students to succeed. The adjuncts tend to be buried in workload. Plus, they tend to teach not just at the CSU, but the local community college. They're picking up work wherever they can.
Yeah.
Having more tenure track faculty adds an element of stability, not just in the who teaches which course and who addresses which need on the campus, who serves on which faculty committee that does planning, but also the opportunity then to engage with students in a more long-term way, because an adjunct might be there one year and not there the next. And a tenure track faculty, when a student starts as a freshman, can act as a mentor through the entire length of that student's experience. And so I think stability is critically important if you're ever going to try to build an institution, and faculty stability is as important as anything.
Thank you. Mr. Day?
Now, I would concur with Trustee Taylor. And again, an unfortunate aspect or fallout of the budget crisis was the reduction in the tenured ranks. And we're working hard to rebuild that. The last year, certainly, we've hired, many of our campuses have hired far more than they have in the last few years. So as Trustee Taylor said, I mean, that high impact, high touch, and specifically tenured faculty, it's demonstrated that student success, not just retention, but success and graduation, your rates are going to be much higher. And it's because of that tenured track faculty is so important. Obviously, it comes with a cost. And so this is a system. Everything's interlinked. We need to be cognizant of that. But we need to continue to make progress, as we have this past year, of bringing on more tenured track faculty on each campus.
Thank you.
In order to be more intrusive in the way we advise students. And actually, advisement is a prerogative of the faculty. So the more time that we have the students to engage with the faculty, the better opportunity for success.
Thank you. So graduation rates. Now, one of your flagship schools, CSU, Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, my understanding is the graduation rate within 4 years is 47%. You take a couple of your urban schools, specifically Los Angeles, which I believe is 4%. Cal State Dominguez Hills is 5%. Obviously, the graduation rate within a four-year term is not good. And that being said, I understand, we all understand, that your CSU, the profile of the CSU student is very different from a private, independent, nonprofit university, a Stanford, Occidental, Loyola, Claremont, USC, or a public university, UCLA or Cal or UCSD. More working families, more students of color, more students at the lower economic strata, white, Latino, Asian American, African American, so forth. So the challenges are more profound, if you will, to get your classes to work and hold a couple jobs. So obviously our graduation rates are, I don't know what the average is, but let's say 5.5, 6 years. And they're accumulating debt simultaneously. They're taking longer to graduate. We need to get them into the workforce so they can be contributors, you know, to California, be part of the economy in California, and open up that slot on the front end so we can get another student into that slot. You know, I know that the Senate, had very strong, robust internal conversations on the acronym GIG, you know, G-I-G, a graduation incentive grant, if you will, to provide students more dollars, if you will, because the total cost of education is never really factored in, which is called life, transportation, gas, food, pay your rent, whether you're with mom or you're struggling, you know, as a single mother to try to pay your rent in your apartment or pay rent with whomever else you're living with under the same roof. So these are budgetary money issues, you know, on our part too, because we have a very strong incentive to try to get these students to graduate, but also recognizing why they're taking so long too, which is, you know, and also too, if we do so, how does the CSU prioritize their money to get the classes and streamline the process, the classes are most impacted, and so forth. Now, through the budget proceedings, which was primarily led by the Senate, and we want to congratulate our colleagues in the fantastic leadership of the Assembly, working together in a collaborative fashion, we provided $97 million. $97 million in fiscal year 2015 budget year, 15-16. How is that money being spent so far?
In our last report.
And if you don't have the micro digging in deep, I don't want you to be concerned about that because I know you guys get a lot of macro. If you don't have the micro, just tell us you don't have it. That's all.
No, I mean, a lot of it, and I don't have the exact dollars, but a lot of it was on enrollment, obviously, to increase enrollment
slots.
Some.
Yeah.
I think there's a discussion as to enrollment versus student success. That debate is going to increase over the next few years to how are we going to allocate future additional resources to make sure that that we're just letting more kids in, or are we going to make sure that they're getting the degree they need and getting the degree in time, persisting and graduating with a meaningful degree. I'd just say to your point about graduation rates, it is a holistic approach. I think part of it is that perhaps we're held to an unfair standard of this four-year degree. I don't think it's fair to hold the CSU student to that for all of the reasons you enumerated. But at the same time, we need to do everything we can from our side to make sure that they're getting the classes and the sections of classes and there's no stumbling blocks in their path and the advising, et cetera, to make sure that they can persist successfully. And then on the back end, to make sure that those who are lingering for far too long, you know, in some instances, it's estimated to be 8 to 10% who are super seniors who are around for 7 or 8 years, we need to, you know, help them really see the door so that we can free up. You know, that's a lot of seats for Californians who want to get a degree. So taking all of those things into approach and much, much more, I think will continue to drive those graduation rates up.
We achieved a graduation. The CSU, way before I came on the board, we had established, the CSU had established a graduation rate of 46% in 2009. And in 2015, they exceeded that by 7 or 8 points. And so they renewed a new goal for 2025 of 56% for the graduation rate. And so I think what's guiding the principles of investment are the resources is into those types of services or programs that will benefit the student and expedite their graduation rates. There's also been some discussion of how we may provide some incentives for the students who are beyond their 124 units in order to encourage them to move on and open some more seats.
I would add, Senator De Leon, that We should aggressively look to what other systems around the country are doing to focus on graduation rates, particularly when you look at young men of color, mm-hmm. Latino and African-American young men. They don't graduate at even those rates that you identified. They're lagging behind severely. There are a number of initiatives funded by major foundations around the country to try to change that calculus. One of the programs the foundation I run is funding at UCLA is a very intrusive, aggressive mentorship program where the sophomores mentor the freshmen, the faculty mentor the juniors, and then we have alumni connect with seniors for African-American males in an effort to try to make sure that when they start, we identify any problems early, get those corrected, and they can move on to graduation, then ultimately successful careers in whatever field they choose. This is being run out of the School of Education at Dr. Tyrone Howard, and we have 50 students in this particular effort, because it's one thing, there are techniques that work, but some of them are really expensive, mm-hmm. and it's hard to scale them. So finding the good ideas that work that are also scalable to improve those rates is part of our challenge.
Is this happening right now, so it is scalable?
It is. We funded a two-year experiment, if you will, pilot project. They created a program they call a Blacklimated. Blacklimated. It's acclimating black students on campus. 50 African-American males this cohort, and then 50 more next year. And then they'll produce a report and let us know. And what I like about it, it's not expensive. The per student cost is relatively cheap to run the program. We gave them money essentially for the staff and some programming expenses.
And where's the funding come from for Blacklimated?
The foundation I run.
That's outside of CSU?
Yes, correct.
Outside of CSU.
That's my day job.
Okay, so this was actually driven by you personally, per se.
Well, and some of the staff on campus had this idea, and I was in a position to ask my board to devote resources to it.
No, kudos to you, because you took the incentive yourself as a trustee. You took it on yourself to secure these resources, because you see the major need that's there, and whether it's, you know, intensive summer programs for young students of color who show incredible promise. They've given real opportunities, but wraparound services, if you will, for the remedial part. You know, I remember, you know, when I was, you know, in school, I needed remedial English. When I was in college, I needed the help. They showered me with the help that I needed, because that opportunity gap that exists, you know, it doesn't close automatically when you're a freshman. You know, you still struggle when you're on campus, and those wraparound services will better retain students of the lower socioeconomic strata, particularly students of color, so they can eventually graduate. And the good thing is, if they're graduating 6 years, they're graduating, or 7 years, they're graduating. Now, what can we do now to lower that? You know, and I know it's going to take resources, because we had this discussion about a gig. You know, how do we, you know, incentivize, and it is finance, so it is a budgetary question also too, because it's an economic issue. We need you to graduate, we need you to move you into the economy, become contributors, we need to open up this slot and bring in the next crop of students in quickly, so they're not holding up that those slots. Okay, so with that, any other questions or commentaries? Ms. Mitchell.
Yes. I just wanted to follow up on the Blacklimated, because it made me think, you know, and I'd love to hear the outcome. So I'd like to stay connected on that. You know, what strikes me, which tends to be the focus of so many of these programs, are the underrepresented students themselves. But when I think about the video that the young African-American man at UCLA filmed that went viral, their consistent message was their experience with the majority population student body. And when we think about some of the really heinous experience college students have had in recent years with the frat parties and the very racist examples that we've seen, you know, I'm wondering what Blacklimated and other programs can do to sensitize the majority population student body, because some, you know, it is a two-way street in terms of making sure that these institutions, in their core culture, are welcoming and value diversity of students, as well as the teaching staff, as we talked about in our meeting earlier.
I think a more diverse faculty will go a long way to helping that, because remember, faculty are in charge of what gets taught, and they should be, because that's what they do.
And setting the culture of the campus.
And setting the culture of the campus, but mm-hmm. you need a more diverse faculty to ensure that some of those things are addressed earlier than mm-hmm. later. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mitchell. With that, any other more questions or commentaries? Yes, Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Abrego, you opposed the new executive pay policy, and we had a conversation about that. And it's your understanding that the new policy, a new campus president would only get 10% more than the predecessor's salary. And we were talking about the foundations and how that's kind of been the back door to get increases in salary. Can you talk about that just a little bit?
Yes, the resolution that came about at the Board of Trustees now allows the chancellor to recommend a salary up to 10% above the incumbents. In extraordinary circumstances, the chancellor can recommend above the 10%. And so the vote was whether or not that 10% should be state-supported or foundation-supported. And the vote by the trustees, of course, came out to make it a state-supported increase if the 10% was approved. The rationale for that is because it created some conflict between foundation monies and state monies, and in order to avoid the conflict of interest, to make the salaries 100% state supported. Now, I opposed that vote on two grounds. One, the compensation overall, which I feel is adequate for our CSU presidents, if you include the benefits and the allowances that they receive. And the reason why I voted against the 10% not being state is because I didn't want them to go over the incumbent's salary, especially in special occasions where they could exceed the 10%. So that was my reason for voting a no on that.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Vice Chair. I see no other questions or commentaries. Can I entertain a motion? Oh, for those in support, we have the University of California, who's here. I'm going to make the assumption in support.
Chairman De Leon and Senators, my name is Steve Juarez, and it's my pleasure on behalf of the University of California and the President's office to offer our unqualified support to Mr. Taylor. I've known Peter Taylor for over 25 years, both I think in our capacities as volunteers at UCLA, both for the Foundation, Alumni Association, and our mutual love for all things Bruin, go Bruins. But we also, I can tell you that in addition to his role in bringing UC financial operations into the 21st century, which he deserves a lot of credit for, he has also been in his personal and professional life dedicated to creating opportunities for young people to realize their dreams in higher education, and for that he's to be lauded. And while we have a very close connection to Mr. Taylor, I would also add that we look forward to working with the other nominees for the CSU board should the Senate decide to confirm them. So with that, we offer our unqualified support to Mr. Taylor and our willingness to work with the other trustees. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Juarez, and the other folks in support. Any other folks in support? Seeing none, those in opposition? Seeing no opposition, may I entertain a motion? We have a motion that's made by Ms. Mitchell. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella?
Aye.
Cannella, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell?
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Runner?
Aye.
Runner, aye. De Leon?
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Motion passes on the 5-0 vote. Mr. Brego, Mr. Day, and Mr. Taylor, congratulations.
Thank you.
Colleagues, we're going to continue to work the file. We have file items number 3 through 6. 3 through 6. May entertain a motion. We have a motion made by Ms. Leyva. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella?
Aye.
Cannella, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell?
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Runner?
Aye.
Runner, aye. De Leon?
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Motion passes on a 5-0 vote. We're going to adjourn the regular session of the Senate Rules Committee, and we're going to enter an executive session.